Are you ready to take your intermittent fasting lifestyle to the next level? There's nothing better than community to help with that. In the Delay, Don't Deny community, we all embrace the clean fast, and there's just the right support for you as you live your intermittent fasting lifestyle. You can connect directly with me in the Ask Jen group, and I'll answer all of your questions personally. If you're new to intermittent fasting or recommitting to the intermittent fasting lifestyle, join the 28-Day Fast Start group. After your fast start, join us for support in the first year group. Need tips for long-term maintenance? We have a place for that. There are many more useful spaces beyond these, and you can interact in as many as you like. Visit jenstevens.com/community to join us. An annual membership costs just over $1 a week when you do the math. If you aren't ready to fully commit for a year, join for a month, and you can cancel at any time. If you know you'll want to stay forever, we also have a lifetime membership option available. IF is free. You don't need to join our community to fast. But if you're looking for support from a community of like-minded intermittent fasters, we're here for you at jenstevens.com/community. That's jenstevens.com/community. Achieving my long-term goals is more about creating healthy habits and less about quick fixes. And that's why I love both intermittent fasting and Daily Harvest. Tim Spector, a gut health expert and founder of Zoe, and Dr. B, gastroenterologist and author of Fiberfueled, recommend that you aim for at least 30 unique plant foods per week. Daily Harvest helps make it easy. One of my favorite options is the sweet potato and wild rice hash harvest bowl. With Daily Harvest, I'm getting tons of plant-based options built on organic fruits and vegetables that are easy to prep and free of weird ingredients such as fillers, seed oils, and added sugars. Create healthy habits that last with Daily Harvest. For a limited time only, go to dailyharvest.com/ifstories to get $30 off your first box plus free shipping. That's dailyharvest.com/ifstories for $30 off your first box and free shipping. dailyharvest.com/ifstories. Welcome to Intermittent Fasting Stories. I'm your host, Jen Stevens, author of the New York Times bestseller, Fast, Feast, Repeat, as well as the book that started it all, Delay, Don't Deny. I lost over 80 pounds thanks to intermittent fasting after learning how to delay my eating rather than denying myself the delicious foods I want to eat. Now, who's ready to hear an inspirational intermittent fasting story? That's why we're here. So let's get excited to talk to today's guest. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 404 of Intermittent Fasting Stories. Today, I'm here with Suzanne Muller. Suzanne lives in New Zealand, and she is a retired medical writer. Welcome, Suzanne.
Hi, Jen. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, it is so nice to talk to you. Now, I was expecting, you know, an accent from someone in New Zealand. Do y'all have accents? Like,
I'm an American living in New Zealand. We moved just about a year ago.
That makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Now I understand a little bit better. I'm like, surely people in New Zealand sound more like Australia, right?
In general?
Well, yes. You're an expat, right?
although the Kiwis don't like being confused for Aussies, so.
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess that's just like every region of America has a different sounding accent.
Yes.
So I get it. You just really helped me understand that a lot. Well, you know, I like to start by asking, what brought you to intermittent fasting and when was that?
Yeah, so I'll start at the beginning. I really didn't start putting on any significant weight until sometime after college. And it was initially really gradual, maybe 3 pounds a year. And, you know, after a while, it started to add up. And at some point, I decided to go on a diet. I guess that was probably around my late 20s at that point. I did Weight Watchers for a while. And I did lose weight on Weight Watchers, but mostly I just made some good friends on the message boards and you know, had a little bit of a social interaction there. But over the years, you know, I guess you could say I was on the count, eat, repeat cycle for many years.
That's not what we like either. Eat, repeat.
No, I did all kinds of calorie counting. And, you know, I think one of the things that I had that is kind of funny is I had what I'm going to call my reverse honesty pants. And it went sort of like this. I had a pair of size 14 pants. And when those pants got tight, it was time to go on a diet. And I absolutely refused to buy anything bigger than a size 14. That was like my limit. And so my pants would get tight. I'd go on a calorie counting or points counting or low fat or low carb. Mm-hmm. And I'd lose 30 pounds, give or take. And then I'd get tired, annoyed, fed up with counting and tracking. I'd stop and I'd gain the 30 pounds back.
So you were like me. You had a wardrobe full of different sizes and you're like, what was it going to be this season? Kind of like, you know, like clothing roulette.
Something like that. Yeah. Although, you know, I will say I almost, even though my size 14 pants got really tight, I rarely got thin enough to fit into the size 12s.
Okay.
Rarely. And maybe I had a really large set of size 14s and a smaller set of size 14s.
But I get it.
But anyway, I still refuse to buy bigger pants.
Yeah.
I just refuse.
14 was my limit for a lot of years. 14 was the set, similar kind of pants. Mm-hmm. And it was like after having my children, I would cycle back up to that and then back down. But I was able to kind of yo-yo within more of a 8 to 14. I could go down and then I'd go right back up. And then eventually, you know, 16 was where I found myself and really an 18. But so you tried it all.
Yeah. So I think I cycled probably between 180 pounds and 215 pounds a whole bunch of times.
And how tall are you?
I'm 5'9".
Okay.
So I rarely could get much below 180, which means I'd never get quite thin enough to be more than just slightly overweight. You know,
right.
180 puts me above what the BMI charts say, which, you know, not, I know that's a flawed measure, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's still somewhat of a measure. So, you know, I'd kind of go back and forth between very overweight and slightly overweight.
Oh,
and
I get
a couple
that.
Of times I did probably pop into what would be considered obese, the low end
okay.
of obese range, which, mm-hmm. you know, at 215 pounds was, that would have put me at obese. So in 2016, I tried low carb and I have to say that felt a bit different on my body mm-hmm. than all the other dieting I'd done because I lost weight doing low carb and the thing that made it different was I was a lot less hungry. I suffered a lot less.
Okay. Yep.
And my mood was better. And so for a while I thought that was going to be a solution for me, a real solution, but I just love food too much and I love desserts and I couldn't sustain it as a lifestyle. I missed desserts and I missed fruit and I missed potatoes and it was still too restrictive and it was still too much to think about.
Did you try all the substitute stuff, like the replacement products, making the low-carb desserts and the low-carb?
No. My approach was more that I told myself I would make one fancy dessert once a month.
Okay.
But that was, it wasn't the same as being able to eat fruit or potatoes or anything like that. So, but what it did indicate to me was that maybe there was a better way. And I did learn that getting my body into ketosis felt better than just plain old calorie restriction on a number of levels. It just felt less, I was less hungry.
Right. That's the magic of ketosis, really.
It felt better on my body. Yeah.
Yeah.
So at that point I was getting into my mid-50s and I was starting to have some joint and back pain and I was going to a chiropractor and that was the person who planted the seed because he mentioned that he was trying intermittent fasting. This was
awesome.
Probably late 2018. And he was doing it for health, not weight loss. He was not overweight. And this, you know, the rationale spoke to me. And because my father had both heart disease and Alzheimer's. And so even if it didn't work for losing weight, I thought, well, maybe this is a healthful thing to do. And so at that point, I went looking for information on fasting. And I found the Obesity Code by mm-hmm. Jason Fung. And everything he said made so much sense to me. So I tried fasting, and it just, I didn't have enough information on how to do it. I didn't develop a consistent practice. And of course, I was dirty fasting.
Right.
Because I was having cream in my coffee, and I was having broth and kombucha, and, you know, needless
kombucha.
To say, it was, I know, right?
I think they do say you can have kombucha maybe in this community. Oh my gosh, that would be so miserable. Oh,
they do. Yeah.
Everybody who's listening, do not have kombucha.
Do not
while fasting.
Have kombucha or bone broth or cream in your coffee. That's not
while
that's
fasting.
Not fasting. That's
have it in your
fasting.
Eating window.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh.
So it was minimally helpful. It didn't really do anything for me. So, you know, I kept looking. And eventually I found, ta-da, Delay Don't Deny.
Woohoo! Yep.
And I read that in August 2019. And it was really like a lightning bolt for me, because that affirmation of Delay Don't Deny, it just spoke to me.
Good.
The simplicity of focusing on one thing after years of counting and tracking, it was so attractive. It sounded so freeing. And I thought, well, could it really work? Really? It made me really hopeful. And of course it worked.
Yay! And here we are.
Here we are. It worked. But so at the time that I started IF, clean fasting with IF, and well, actually I say clean fasting. I probably in the beginning was not 100% clean. I was still having cream in my coffee at the very beginning. And was not clean fasting, but that only went on for, I'm going to say 4 months.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. That's the truth.
That's the truth.
The irony is that after I read the obesity code, I was like, wait a minute, we don't want to have any kind of cephalic phase insulin response. And I don't want to have any of that they all were having over there. But anyway, but I did not lose my initial weight fast and clean because I didn't know about it till obesity code came out in 2016. Anyway.
Right. Yeah. At the time I started IF, I was at about 198 pounds. And about a year later, I had lost 30 pounds. And I continued to lose some more pounds over the next year and declared maintenance at around 165 pounds. And since then have lost a few more. I'm probably at 158 now or something like
that.
That's
awesome.
So yeah, it was, I think the thing that, that's hard to explain was how my improved metabolic health with IF has influenced my mind and my mood. And I think I mentioned I first noticed it when I started doing low carb or keto. I noticed that somehow being in ketosis changed my mind, my feelings, my mood. And even though I wasn't able to sustain keto because it just wasn't doable as a lifestyle, I retained that memory of how much easier it was to manage my eating and my mood when I was in ketosis. And so when I realized that I could achieve the same thing with IF, I thought that really could work for me and that really could be sustainable.
And because we want to eat what we want to eat. You wanted to have your desserts. You wanted to have the carbs. It's delicious.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and it works not because IF doesn't take any work. It does.
Right.
But because it was sustainable. It mm-hmm. was a lifestyle that didn't make me miserable.
Right.
Basically.
I think that's the key.
Bottom line.
I mean, literally, that is the key. You know,
don't be miserable.
Don't be miserable. You have to find something that is sustainable. And I mean, you know, I just did my experiment with whole food, plant-based, lower fat, worked really well for my body. My body likes it, but it didn't feel sustainable emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so, but intermittent fasting, once you settle in and you really cement it as a lifestyle, you know, you can keep going.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the difference. So
tweak it till it's easy, right?
Yeah, well, exactly.
That's the whole point of that phrase is don't be miserable. You can make it work in some way, and everyone makes it work differently, but we can do it. Yeah.
I think that really is the key. We can tweak it till it's easy. And if you're trying it and it's miserable, now, not in the first month, you know, if your body is adapting, you're going to have to push through that. The adaptation period is hard when you're adapting. But once you get fat adapted and your body knows what to do, if it doesn't feel easy, you're going to need to tweak something. Window timing, window length, what you're eating, all of those things are tweakable.
Exactly. Exactly.
So when you started, lost 30 pounds in your first year, what approach were you using? Like, how did you begin?
I did the rip off the Band-Aid approach and went straight to 20 hours of fasting and a 4-hour eating window.
Something to be said about that is you adapt quickly with that. If you can just force yourself in there. Yeah.
I might have eased into 19.5 first. It was, you know, it kind of floated between 19.5 and 24. But yes, I eventually settled into just a solid 4-hour eating window every day. And I did that, I'm going to say it was in 2022 or late 2022, early 2023 that I had a little bit of a glitch in my maintenance. So I started 2019 and lost pretty most of the weight I wanted to lose in about a year. And then I maintained for a couple of years. And then, yeah, I had a little bit of window creep.
Ah, so tell us about that.
Yeah. So not surprising that maintenance can be hard too, because guess what? I never maintained either on any other diet. Like, I really didn't maintain. I thought, oh, good, I've maintained for 2 years. But then I started to not maintain, right? Things started to drift. And, you know, part of that was we were traveling. We were nomads. We were in the process of relocating. I didn't have a scale. I really am a daily weigher. And I do just look at my weekly average. And actually, I will say that towards the end of my weight loss phase, I was looking at my monthly average.
Okay.
Because my
weight was trending.
It was very slightly continuing to go down. At the very end, I turned into a real turtle. You know, after I lost 30 pounds, I lost about 10 more eventually. But those last 10 pounds were complete turtles. It was half a pound to a pound a month that I was still losing. So I did start looking at my monthly average.
Well, I think that's a great lesson, because so often we'll hear from people who are frustrated and they're like, I'm not losing any more weight. I'm stuck. I'm on a plateau. And so very often it's people who have 5 to 10 pounds to go until they see the number they want to see. Like, they have in their mind, I want to see this number. And it's 5 to 10 pounds below where they are right then. And did you notice at that time that your clothing size was changing maybe more quickly than the scale was moving, or not? Did you notice body recomposition?
Not really. I have not noticed. The clothing size has always tracked with my weight for me.
Okay.
And but I will say that my, you know, my clothing size didn't change that much. You know, I was into my very, very fat 14s, and I'm now, I can wear a 10, but I still have a bunch of 12s. So I still wear the 12s, and they're very loose on me, but some 10s are too tight on me. So I'm kind of between a 10 and a 12. So it's not a huge difference.
You're really tall. 5'9". Yeah. That makes such a difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I was, you know, at a very normal weight as a college student, I wore an 11, like in the junior sizes. So that's exactly where I am now. If there was a size 11 that worked for me, that I would wear an 11. The 12s are all loose. The 10s, some of them are good. Some of them are tight. So I don't worry about it.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories. Promo code IFSTORIES10 to get your Magnesium Breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's buyoptimizers.com/IFSTORIES, promo code IFSTORIES10.
If you've been listening to my podcast for a while, you know what a fan I am of Dr. Tim Spector and the work he's doing with Zoe. I was first introduced to his work in 2015, and I've been following his research ever since. What I love most about the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast is that they have weekly interviews with world-leading experts who explain how their latest research can benefit your health. Recently, I was thrilled to finally meet him face-to-face as we recorded an episode for the Zoe Science and Nutrition podcast, and this episode aired on April 11th. We had a chance to talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study, and I had the opportunity to explain the clean fast to Jonathan, which may explain why he didn't enjoy his prior experiences with fasting. Search for Zoe Science and Nutrition on your podcast player or on YouTube to hear the latest episode, and don't forget to look for the April 11th episode to hear me, Tim, and Jonathan talk about the world's biggest intermittent fasting study. Well, that's Matt. That puts it in perspective. You've gotten back down to the body that you had when you were first in your grown-up body.
Yes, early exactly. In college, fully grown, but at a slim weight. Yes,
right.
Yeah,
right. Well, that's good. So you feel good in your body.
Yeah, I feel great. I feel awesome. Yeah, yeah. So back to the maintenance question. You know, okay. my window started to slip, and I actually gained back about 15 pounds during that time. It was, you know, during the latter half of 22 and beginning of 2023. And I realized that my window had slipped to, you know, that I would, instead of breaking my fast at 5 p.m. like I normally had, I would break it at 3 or at 4 yeah. or at 2, and gotten a little loosey-goosey with that. But it was one of the things that got really hard there was that it felt harder. The whole thing okay. felt harder for some reason. And I think in hindsight, I'd gotten back to that point where I was doing a hard part over again. Mm-hmm. I was never completely emptying my glycogen stores. I was never completely getting into that fat burning phase. And when I finally decided to try ADF, I decided this on my 4-year fastiversary, which was August of 2023.
So you're like, I'm ready to try it.
I finally decided to try EDF, and boom, I lost the 15 pounds. Well, I had already lost about 5 just paying attention to my window, but I immediately was able to lose those 10 pounds again and get back to my desired spot, which is in the, you know, high 150s, low 160s is my range, basically. So, yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So what made you convinced to try it? What inspired you to try ADF?
The realization that I was doing the hard part over and over again, and that I needed to fast long enough to mm-hmm. really empty the glycogen stores and get into that heavier, more deep ketosis, at least occasionally, and that it wasn't happening with my daily window, and that it was just hard every day. So why not? You know, the thought process for me was, if I can have one hard day a week instead of 7, that right. works for me. And then it turned out that my one hard day a week, which I thought was going to be the down day, isn't really that hard. And I actually really love it because I feel really good. But you know, when you haven't tried ADF, I think, and you're contemplating it, it seems really hard. It seems yeah. like a
it really,
really
does
hard,
seem hard.
It's intimidating.
And you're mentally. Like
mentally intimidating, seems like a really hard thing to do. And for me, when I tried it, I was like, well, this isn't that bad. It's actually not that hard.
See, you had built up your fasting muscle. So I want to pop that in there because people who are new, yes. like if you've just been, if you're in your first couple months, your first few months, don't try to rush ADF just because we hear from so many people in the community. Suzanne, I'm sure you've seen people who will be trying ADF and they'll say, oh, I'm loving it. I tried it 2 years ago and I wasn't ready and I hated it, but now I am. Now I'm ready. So it's just something you really need to work up to for a lot of people. If you tried it and you hated it, that doesn't mean you're always going to hate it.
It took me 4 years to decide
to even try it.
Because and it was all in my mind. I wasn't mentally ready for it. I really thought it was just going to be awful and hard and you know, I was just like, no, I don't want to do that. I'm fine with my daily window, until my daily window got hard and I had a reason to try it. And then that really changed things for me.
I'm glad.
I'm now a big fan of ADF. So I've adopted some ADF as part of my maintenance protocol. So I now do one down day, one up day, and the rest, my usual 4-hour eating window.
Okay, so that's a good hybrid approach. I think that's probably a really good one. Do you do the mealless Monday?
I do not do the meal. Yeah.
But you do it on Monday?
No, I don't do it on Monday.
Okay, I just wondered if you're joining the Monday group.
Yeah, no, I do it on Thursday.
Okay.
Because then I can have Friday as my up day, and it feels like a fun start to the weekend. And even though I'm retired, I don't know, you know, there's more.
No, I get it.
Social activities on the weekend mm-hmm. with friends and stuff who still work. So, yeah.
When I would try 5-2 in the past, and I haven't done any down days on purpose, I could have accidentally had one here and there that I don't know about. But whenever I did 5-2 way back in the day, Monday and Thursday were my down days. Then when I did 4-3, it was, what was it? Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. Because again, just like you, that Friday up day just seemed like a very special day.
And I did Monday and Thursday for about 2.5 months when I was working on releasing those 10 pounds that had crept back on. And then I got to about 160 pounds and I thought, all right, well, and also it started to get harder. The ADF, the down day started to get harder. And I thought, oh, maybe 2 days is too much.
Right.
2 days a week.
So you backed it to one.
I thought, maybe I'll go to 1 day a week. And that,
yeah,
I've been doing that since about November. And that's
easy.
Been working really well. Yeah. I get like my weekly reset.
Yeah. I think that's great. I mean, there are a lot of people out there. We just found out the Prime Minister of the UK. I don't know what his name is. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
But the Prime Minister, he has a mealless Monday. So he doesn't eat on Monday. And apparently people were like freaking out. Like, how can he run the country if he hasn't eaten? We were like, we know how he can.
Right.
But he's doing it for the health benefits.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
So how do you structure your down day? How do you structure your up day?
So my down day, I basically have my coffee in the morning, my black coffee in the morning, and then I just drink water for the rest of the day. And that's that. I don't do a mini meal. I did try to do a mini meal, but you know how some specific things trigger diet brain for specific people?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The thought of having to count and pay attention to the calories and the amount of food I was eating and all of that, felt very triggering to me. And it annoyed me. And I also felt like if I'm going to eat, I want to eat. Just leave me alone and let me eat if I want to eat.
If you're going to eat, you want to eat until you're full. Yeah.
I'm happy to not eat, but don't make me stop when I still want to keep eating.
Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense.
So it just didn't. Yeah. I just didn't enjoy it. And then my up day, I usually break my fast mid morning, about 10 a.m. I still have my black coffee in the morning, as usual. Break my fast about mid morning, 10 a.m. or so, 10 or 11 a.m. with a big brunchy kind of thing.
Yum.
Yeah. And then eat my regular dinner at my usual time. So I get plenty of food. And on those days, if I'm cooking or whatever, I'm happy to taste everything and snack. And, you know, I actually don't really restrict at all what I'm eating on my up day. So I get lots of food.
That sounds like a great way to do it. And I think it's so important to just recognize that either down day option is fine. And it's important to find the one that works the best for you. I'm not like married to either type. Like, I don't think everybody should do it this way or the other way. I'm really married to the idea, though, that you shouldn't think one way is better than the other universally.
For sure.
Absolutely. And that's the point I always want to get across, because, you know, you're in the community, you see it. People often have the language that somehow if you choose the 500 calorie down day, that's not as good. It's like a backup plan, when really it's a legitimate way to do it. And if Absolutely. There are people who do so much better with the 500 calorie meal. Like exactly. Maybe they sleep better or their body's not as stressed.
Right.
And so they need to have the 500 calorie down day meal. You know, definitely. It's been so long since I've tried it. I don't know what would be best for me right now because I've eaten every day since 2016. I could see it both ways. You know, maybe I would enjoy a down day meal, but maybe like you, I would feel like, no, I don't want to stop now. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would have to experiment and tweak it till it's easy.
Right. Right.
Back at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, I love that you know for sure that you don't want to be bothered with counting or having to stop because that makes perfect sense.
Of all the things, that's what triggers my diet brain. Like, you know, I have no problem with the scale. I can see the scale go up 2 pounds and I'm like, yeah, variation, whatever. You know, maybe that's my scientist brain. I know that data moves around and there's a tolerance to everything and, you know, nothing is ever exactly on the spot. So, you know, I'm not one of those people who gets triggered by the number on the scale, but
that's what I get triggered by, as you know.
I know, yeah. I know. But yeah. I definitely get triggered by the idea of, was that 500 calories? Was it 600? Can I have 50 more calories? Can I eat this handful of almonds? Is that too much? You know,
right.
No, I don't want to do it.
Knowing yourself is so important in this process, right? And and we're not all the same. Some people need to weigh, some people can't weigh, but it's all about knowing what is going to make you lose it.
Exactly.
And avoiding those things.
Exactly.
That's part of the tweaking it till it's easy.
Yeah, yeah.
So one down day a week just feels right and allows you to stay right where you are.
Yep. Well, I mean, my weight might still be trending downward a little bit with one day a week. When I flipped down to from 2 days a week to doing one day a week, I was probably averaging 160 pounds and now I'm averaging 158. So I might still be trending downward slightly, but not fast. You know, it's more or less maintenance. So I'm not going to worry about it. And I think that having the one down day a week also allows me to not think too hard about what I'm eating. I eat healthy stuff anyway, but it allows me to not worry about, you know, did I eat too many nuts today, for example?
Right? Yeah. Did you ever do 3 down days a week?
Never, no.
Okay. I wanted to put that out there because sometimes people have the mistaken idea that it's either or. You're either doing the eating window approach or you should be doing like 4-3 or pure alternate daily fasting with every other day. And so you found success with 2 down days a week followed by up days and the other 3 days were eating window days, which we consider a hybrid approach. So that makes a lot of sense.
And I love the hybrid approach.
Yeah. And sometimes people get confused because I said I don't know if I said it in Fast, Feast, Repeat, but I definitely said in Delay, Don't Deny that 5-2 was not a weight loss approach for me. But when I say 5-2, I actually mean original 5-2.
Yes.
You probably know that.
Yes.
Original 5-2 is 5 up days, 2 down days. Right. So 5-2 with 5 up days and 2 down days was not a weight loss approach for me.
It wouldn't be for me either.
No.
It would not be
but
for me.
But 4-3 was. I could have 4 up days and 3 down days and lose weight. But for some reason at that time, nobody was thinking about doing a hybrid. You were either doing eating windows or you're doing 4-3 or 5-2 or that was it. So I just wanted to clarify that because someone the other day asked me, Jen said you can't lose weight on 5-2. And I'm like, but the hybrid approach is different than straight up 5-2. Why are they all called such confusing things? I didn't name any of them. Well, I named the hybrid approach, but well, I'm glad you found a rhythm that feels good. And I'm sure that someone will be inspired to hear that they could just do 2 down days a week or maybe just 1 and still lose the weight.
Yep. Yep. For
sure. So let's talk about your diet, how you eat. And when I say diet, I don't mean like on a diet, but I mean like what you eat.
Yeah.
So you had been low carb for a while and you said that now you eat healthy. So what does that look like to you for you?
I eat everything, but I eat a lot of, well, I almost never eat out.
Okay.
I love to cook. So I don't eat out. The extent of kind of the ultra processed food that I eat is the occasional bag of chips because I like potato chips, but mostly, you know, chicken, fish, pork, veggies, eggs, cheese, nuts. And we tend to eat very veggie heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So most days, many days, I will break my fast with veggies and hummus. That's
Yum.
Just a favorite. I've been experimenting a lot with fermented vegetables. So I've made a number of posts in the community about fermented veggies.
I've seen them.
And I am just an absolute fan, especially carrots. Put a little crushed red pepper in there and oh my God, it's so good.
So tell me what you do. I've seen your posts and they look so pretty.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, look away because I want to do all that, but I don't know what it is holding me back. So tell me how you do your fermented veggies.
Well,
teach
so,
us.
Yeah. So, okay. So if I'm fermenting some carrots, for example, which is one I've done over and over again, I will take the carrots. I will rinse them off with water. So wash them basically, cut the ends off, cut them into rounds and put them in a jar. And then I will take some cold water, put in about a tablespoon of salt in there, tablespoon to a tablespoon and a half of salt in there, non-iodized salt, non-chlorinated water, that's important, and whatever other seasonings you want in there. I like, sometimes I'll put ginger in there, sometimes mm-hmm. I'll put garlic in there, or both, a little red pepper, that kind of stuff. And then you fill the jar up with the salted water and you make sure the veggies are submerged. So you want the veggies all to be under the salted water. And there's a number of
okay.
ways to do that. They sell fermentation weights, which are glass weights, and you can plunk those on top and keep all the veggies below the salted water. Or you can take a cabbage leaf and kind of wrap it around the top and push it down and it'll hold everything down. The whole point is that the veggies have to be underwater for the correct fermentation to happen to the veggies.
Okay.
Anything on the surface, you might get a teeny bit of mold.
See, that's what would scare me. I'd be like, it's ruined.
No, it's not. It's
okay.
not scary. That's why oftentimes,
okay.
so I'll use either a cabbage leaf or a grape leaf from my grapevine outside. I'll just rinse it off and stick it in.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're ready to eat, I will just pull that off and throw it out. That top layer, whether it's a cabbage leaf or whatever, pull that off and throw it out. Skim anything off that doesn't look good, throw that out.
Okay.
And then stick it in the fridge. Once you pull that off, you stick it in the fridge, then you're good. And you can tell.
Okay.
Smell it.
Okay.
Taste
so if it,
it
smelled bad or tasted bad, it would not be good.
You guaranteed you would be able to smell.
Okay.
You know, and not so much. I mean, the cabbage is always going to smell a little cabbagey, but.
Right. So you like to do the carrots. What else do you ferment?
I have some beets going right now.
Ooh.
That's my first time doing beets, and I haven't tried them yet, but I'm going to get to try them today. So
awesome.
And then I do hot peppers. So I ferment hot peppers. I'm going to try onions. I haven't done onions yet, but I want to try that. I've tried cauliflower. I think it gets a little rubbery. I've tried cucumbers. I haven't figured out how to make them stay crisp. They get very soft.
Okay.
So I haven't mm-hmm. been successful with that. I mean, successful. They're edible, but I don't love it. So, yeah.
Well, that's so interesting.
Oh, and I haven't talked about my non-scale victories.
Well, let's talk about them.
Some great
Tell
ones.
Tell us those.
So I think, you know, the really big one for me was I completely got rid of my plantar fasciitis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 61 now. I had had that since my 20s.
Wow.
Like constant foot
wow.
pain off and on, but it was a constant presence in my life. Sometimes it was better. Sometimes it was worse. Sometimes it was completely debilitating, but it was always there. And now I don't even think about it. My feet just don't hurt anymore at all.
Wow.
I also, when I was in my 30s, started getting dry eyes. My eyes got really dry and I had to put ointment in every night before I went to bed, or I would wake up with like this totally like gritty feel in my eyes. I no longer need the ointment. My eyes are not dry overnight anymore. The bumps on your upper arms, the red bumps on your skin, those are totally gone. And significant reduction in joint pain. I was starting to get, you know, quite a bit of pain in my hips and my hands and foot calluses. Foot calluses are gone. My blood pressure went down. My resting heart rate went really down. My resting heart rate used to be like 68 and now it's like 55.
We hear that all the time. You end up with the resting heart rate of an athlete.
Yeah. And my resting heart rate was 68 since I was a teen. So really interesting. I was starting to get a neck hump, like a hump on the back of my neck.
When I was obese, dowager hump. Is that what they call it?
Yes. That is pretty much gone. It is gone. One that I noticed recently, and you know, it's easy to not notice, is I don't get canker sores anymore. I used to get canker sores in my mouth all the time. Like I would bite my lip or bite my tongue and then I'd get a sore and it was painful and awful. And yeah, that doesn't happen
That's
anymore.
Amazing.
I can still bite my lip and then but I won't develop a sore. Which is weird.
That's fabulous. But, healing. Yeah, we're healing.
I know. It's amazing. It's amazing. I feel so much better. The amount of pain that left my life because of IF is impressive. It really, really took a lot of pain away.
Yeah.
So
I love that. That's so important for people to understand, you know, regardless of whether your weight is turtling or whatever is happening, or you could be frustrated by what feels like lack of progress. Just think of all the ways that you're going to heal your body over time. Getting rid of pain is huge.
Yes, it was absolutely huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the one thing, once I realized how all that pain had gone away, in my mind, I knew I was never going to stop doing this ever. Because it didn't matter if I regained back all the weight, if the pain stayed away, I was going to keep doing this. So it wasn't even about the weight anymore. I felt so much better. I was like, wow, that is a complete transformation. Just totally transforms the way you feel about yourself.
It really does. And, you know, you look beautiful for 61. I never would have guessed 61. But, you know, we want to remain as youthful in our bodies as we can. Now, I'm not talking about no wrinkles and whatever. We're going to have our skin's going to do what it does. But I'm talking about, you know, moving through the world in what feels like a youthful body.
Yep.
Strong body.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you do to keep your body strong?
Oh, I do reformer Pilates twice a week.
I'm going tomorrow.
Yay!
I'm going once a week right now. Did you hear that I was doing that?
Yes, I heard you.
I know it's out on the episodes, but I feel like I talked about it in the community, but I am absolutely loving it.
I started doing Pilates probably 15 years ago, and I was in my 40s. And I started getting lower back pain and I went to a Pilates class, one Pilates class, and my lower back pain went away with one class. And I thought,
that's amazing.
Okay, I think I'm doing this.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been doing it for a long time and I'm a big fan. So I do reformer Pilates twice a week. And then other than that, you know, just all the other stuff, hiking, walking, kayaking, there's a lot of great hiking here. It's a beautiful place. So yeah, just generally being out and about. Lots of gardening. I've been doing a lot of gardening because now we bought a place and we have lots of land and I've planted a lot of stuff. So it's been actually very nice to be able to do all that weeding and gardening without being in total pain.
Oh yeah. So are you planting food or is it just like ornamental type of things?
Both, but we've planted a fair bit of food. So those hot peppers that I was fermenting, those are all peppers we grew.
That's what I wondered, if you were fermenting your own crop.
I haven't planted carrots, so the carrots are from the store and so are the beets. But we are growing peppers, we've grown tomatoes, we've grown broccoli and cauliflower. I'm growing tomatillos. because okay. I'm a big fan of tomatillos and nobody sells them here because it's New Zealand.
Oh, I never thought about that.
They don't do Mexican food particularly. So it just isn't much of an influence for that there. So I've never seen a fresh tomatillo here. So I'm growing those myself. And the same with the peppers. There's not that many peppers in the store, not that often. So, yeah.
Well, that's really sad. I never thought about the fact that Mexican food might not be like all around the world. I can't even imagine.
I know, right? Well, it's true. Don't come to New Zealand wanting Mexican food because
that is very sad.
You will probably be disappointed. But we make our own Mexican food and we do a good job of that. So.
Well, I bet you do. Now, people need to make Mexican restaurants all around the world because it is really, I could eat it every day. I could eat Mexican food every day. I'm going to have some pinto beans in just a few minutes when we're done recording.
Mexican
gonna open
food
with
is
some
delicious.
Pinto beans, and I have some guacamole, and I have a little tortilla, put a little cheese on there. It's going to be so good. Yum. It's going to be my opener.
Well, they do have the chipotles in adobo sauce at the grocery store, the cans. So that.
Yeah.
That is good. I can usually find that. So.
Well, that's good. You got to make do with what you have, right?
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah.
So you were a medical writer. And so you have a lot of background in the health field, understanding the body. What parts about intermittent fasting and the impact on health really resonated with you as you learned about it?
Oh, gosh. That's a
trick question.
Trick question. Hey, you're not supposed to ask questions that I wasn't expecting.
Sorry.
No, that's all good. That's all good. I think for me, one of the things that has become obvious is that, and I alluded to this earlier, there's something about having high insulin in my body 24/7 or most of the day or too much of the day that was affecting my mood and my mind. And I don't know what that is, but people do talk about how intermittent fasting has helped them mentally and mood wise. And when I listened to a Zoe podcast a while ago, and they had Dr. Ellen Langer on there, and I have yet to read her book, but she said, the mind and body should be understood as one unit.
Oh, I love that. Is she the menopause one or no? Was she the?
No. She was someone about, she was talking about thinking your way to health, using your mind to be healthier. Yeah. And so, you know, the concept that the mind and body should be thought of as one unit makes total sense. We talk about mind-body connection all the time, but they're not separate. Why would we worry about connecting them? Anyone who's ever experienced a hormone imbalance knows what I'm talking about. You can't make your mind calmer if your body is in turmoil. It doesn't work that way. They are connected, and it's not just that they're connected by some little hard-to-find thread. They're one and the same. And so fasting balances so many aspects of our bodies, and that includes our minds. And so I have, as a medical writer and as someone who's used to looking at medical information, I've been super intrigued by the connection between mind and mood and our insulin levels. And I think there's a lot there that we don't know yet, but I think we're going to find more and more that it's a hugely important connection.
I think so too. And having really high levels of insulin all the time affects all of the systems of our body. You know, like they're calling what, Alzheimer's, type 3 diabetes, and it's really all connected. You really are not going to live your healthiest life if you have high insulin all the time.
Yep.
In any way. Yep. Yeah. So many things. Yeah. That's
agreed.
Really important.
Agreed.
And of course the gut health.
I don't know if that was the answer to your question, but that's a great question.
An
intriguing aspect that I think needs to be explored further. And I think we're just scratching the surface of what that means.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this, all of My Mochi's fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream, are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings or the midnight munchies. Yeah. You know who you are, with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Looking to instantly upgrade your Mother's Day gift from typical to meaningful? Shop Etsy. Get up to 30% off well-crafted and personalized gifts from participating shops until May 12th. This year, embrace your creative side. You know, the side your mom gave you. And shop Etsy for custom jewelry, style pieces, home decor, and extra special items she'll adore. Need something original and affordable for Mother's Day? Etsy has it. Shop until May 12th for up to 30% off gifts for mom. Terms apply.
Now, if only we could have someone develop a continuous insulin monitor. I don't know how hard that would be. We have our continuous glucose monitor. I feel like that would not be something they could just do, since you can't test your insulin at
home
at all. But
probably
not.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Yeah,
I would love to have that. You'd really see what was going on.
Definitely. Yeah.
So do you talk about intermittent fasting in your regular life? Have you gotten anybody started with it?
I do talk about it when people are interested, and I'll usually talk their ear off about it if they show even the slightest bit of interest. I do have a couple folks here in the local community who I met through Pilates who have gotten started, and I was able to loan one of them your book, Fast, Feast, Repeat.
Yay.
But I would love to get more people started. I also, try not to be super pushy about it. So, if people are interested, I absolutely want to, help people get started.
I'm the same way. And when I meet people, I tell them what I do, and then it comes up, but I don't try to push them. If they're like, oh, I can never do that because whatever their reason is, I'm like, well, you might be surprised. And then I just,
right.
If they seem interested, I'll help them as much as they want. But if they could never do it because fill in the blank, then all right, if you ever change your mind, I'll tell you more. That's it.
Exactly.
That's enough.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because you do want to teach people this great thing that we've found.
It's been transformative. It really has been life-changing for me. The freedom now is amazing because I just don't worry about it anymore.
That's just the most important thing. And I love what you said before. I'm going to come back to it. No matter what happened with your weight, you would never stop doing intermittent fasting because it just feels so like a great way to live, and it has improved your mood, and you're not having to think about food all the time, and just so many other reasons.
Absolutely. And the pain.
I forgot the pain.
I mean, everything hurt after a while, and that's all gone. So, that's an amazing thing right there. If it was only that, I would keep fasting. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, that's true. I'm a little younger than you, not a lot, 54. I used to think 50s were really, really old. And now I'm like, 60 sounds young.
Woo-hoo, 60s.
<You're right. laughs> But the people I went to high school with, I'm friends with a lot of them on Facebook and, see, they're going through a lot of stuff. And, I'm watching the people that are my age cohort struggle with a lot of physical ailments. And I don't want that to be me too early. I'm sure you see the same thing.
I was already headed in that direction when I started fasting. And boy, it just completely turned things around for me. So I'm so grateful that I found your book. Really, really grateful. Thank you for writing that book and all the others. Because you're helping a lot of people. It's amazing.
Well, you're welcome. And sometimes I'm like, why in the world? I'm a teacher. I'm not a medical writer. Although this is something that I've just realized, there's some scandal going on right now in the world of really, I guess, nonfiction books written by doctors. And I'm going to put in quotation marks, written by doctors. There was a ghostwriter who was like the most popular ghostwriter, and she worked for all the big publishing houses. And she was like plagiarizing everything.
Oh, gosh.
I'm not going to name the books that she was. I read a whole article about it, but it's books you would recognize. Like, I wrote every word of my books. I wrote all of them myself. I didn't realize people didn't write their own books. You know, here I am, just a wide-eyed teacher. What? Your name's on the book and you didn't write that book? Anyway.
Right.
But yeah. But yeah. So my point with that is a lot of the books that people are reading that are written by doctors were not written by doctors after all. Whoops.
Anyway, indeed.
So I guess a school teacher who can really research can write a book as well as some ghostwriter.
Absolutely.
Who's plagiarizing. She was
way
plagiarizing.
Better than.
Yeah, she was plagiarizing blog posts and like putting whole sections into people's books. And also she was using sections from one book by one author in another book by another author.
Oh, goodness.
I know. So the publishers are quietly cleaning these books up is what, I've heard.
Wow.
It's a big problem.
Well, I hadn't heard that scandal. I'm going to have to go digging.
Anyway, I learned a lot. I've learned a lot this whole time. Like, what? Somebody didn't write their own book? To what? Someone is ghostwriting and stealing, plagiarizing? That's, I guess maybe because I have a doctorate, and you do too. You understand. Like, we were trained to be very, very careful. And
yes,
when you're writing something, and you have to have a citation, and you don't just copy pieces of things and put them in there.
Right.
No.
Right. That's not how it works. Nope.
No, not at all. But I'm really glad that I wrote the books, because again, I just want to teach people about fasting, because it has the potential to change your life the same way that it changed mine.
Yep.
So
exactly.
That is what it's all about. So
yeah. Indeed.
So we are almost out of time. What would you tell someone just starting out with intermittent fasting, or what do you wish you knew when you first started?
I think the importance of mindset is a big
so important
for me. What you tell yourself determines how you're going to feel about things. So if you are constantly telling yourself negative things, you will feel negatively about things. If you're constantly telling yourself that you can't, you won't be able to. If you're constantly telling yourself it's hard, it's going to feel really hard. If you instead tell yourself that you got to tweak it till it's easy and you're going to do it and you can, it's going to be easier. So I'm a big fan of being very careful about what I think and to myself. It really does determine how you feel about things. Your thoughts determine your emotions. They do.
Yeah. And you're setting yourself up for either success or failure. And I talked about that a lot in 28 Day Fast Start Day by Day. And really having all the experience with intermittent fasters, first on Facebook and now in our private community, and seeing who struggles and who does not. And what's so interesting, the person who's struggling and the person who's not struggling, the person who's struggling might actually be losing weight more quickly than the person who isn't, but it's all about their mindset and how they're approaching the process and how they're willing to tweak. And like the more desperate you are, the harder you're going to struggle, right? The more desperately you're thinking inside your head and just relaxing into the process, having that positive mindset, going with the flow.
Yes. Yes. And I think, you know, the other thing is everyone talks about willpower when dieting. It makes it seem like you can't lose the weight and keep it off. If you can't do that, then it's your fault because you have no willpower. And I came to realize that, you know, willpower is a limited resource.
Right.
You can't develop a lifestyle based only on willpower. If you hate doing it, it will not work. So, you know, the reason I failed all those years to keep the weight off was not lack of willpower. It was, I was trying to do it with a lifestyle that made me miserable. And anything that makes you miserable isn't sustainable, no matter how much willpower you have. It's just not sustainable.
Yes. And if fasting feels miserable, tweak it till it's easy.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So if you hate doing it, it won't work. But also what you tell yourself is important. So both of those have to work together. Then you can find something that works for you that is sustainable and maintain that positive mindset about what you're doing and how you're doing it it all gets a lot easier.
So true. Well, Suzanne, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you, Jen. It's been wonderful.
Do you have an intermittent fasting story to tell? Email me at jen@intermittentfastingstories.com and I'll add you to the lineup. That's GIN@intermittentfastingstories.com. The world wants to hear your story. That's it for today. Remember, I may have a doctorate, but I'm not a medical doctor. So don't use anything you hear on this podcast as a substitute for medical advice. Please always check with your doctor or healthcare provider if you have medical questions. I'll talk to you next week, Fasting Family, where we will hear another inspiring story. Have a great week and fast on. Intermittent Fasting Stories is edited, mixed, and mastered by Resonate Recordings. To learn more, visit them at resonaterecordings.com or email them at hello@resonaterecordings.com. Intermittent Fasting Stories listeners will receive a free offer if you mention that you heard it on the podcast.
Enhance your listening experience with Wondery Plus. Enjoy ad-free listening, exclusive content, binges, and more. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.